All right, we'll start the top of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. New Mishnah, called Mishnayos, and then we'll get to some of the beginning of the Gadatah of Eretz Yisrael. And we'll see Shach Chovah Chavero, Vahalah, we'll see Shemachar Lo Et HaSadeh. This person takes out a Shach Chov, right, an obligation, a debt document that he owes him money. And then the debtor brings out a document that shows that he bought, or that the creditor sold him the property. If I really was, I was obligated to pay you money, right? You should have taken my money and not given me anything in order to first take back the payment of the loan before you sold me the field. No, this creditor was smart. Because this other guy, if he only has metalkalim or his money, he can be what's called mavriach, his kesef. He can keep the money hidden from the creditor, and then the creditor will have nothing for collateral. Now that he sold them property, right, the creditor knows exactly what his collateral is for the loan. Then he can go after the property that he just sold him as the collateral for the loan. So therefore he's now put himself, the creditor, in a better position by selling the property to the debtor.
So he's got a lien on the property that was bought after the fact.
Yeah.
Okay,
my time is Rabbanan. What's the reasoning of Rabbanan? Shafir Kamar Admon. Admon makes a lot of sense. Why would you transact with somebody after you if they own you money? So that in a place where they give the money first, and then after the money's paid, they write the shtar, they write the document of sale, then everybody agrees that you should have taken the payment when you took the money. Mm-hmm. Meaning that he could have taken the money and then just afterwards say, I'm not signing a document about the sale, this is to pay back for the loan. So that everybody would agree, even the Rabbana would agree in such an instance. The question is, the argument is, the place where you first write the document and then give the money. Abai says he should have told some other Edim, the only reason I'm signing this shtar sales, this sale document is because I want to get my money back from my loan as a creditor. And the Rabbanan Sabre, something that we've seen before, Chavra Yisrael, friend as a friend, Chavra Yisrael, your friend as a friend, meaning that if he tells some other people that he's really not going to go through with this transaction, he's just doing this to get the money out of the guy, then by the time the transaction comes around, he's not going to pay him because he'll know about it already. And by these rumors or words, word travels fast, and therefore the Rabbanan did not require him to tell others that he's only transacting this property for his benefit and not to really have a transaction here. All right, next Mishnah. Shnayim shehotziu shtar chov zeh al zeh. So this is interesting. Each one of them, two people have a shtar chov against each other. Aman omer ilayti chayav l'chal ketet at the lova mimeni. So these are not on the same day. They're sequential loans. So the debtor borrowed from the creditor, and then the creditor went back and borrowed from the debtor. So Admon says, well, it doesn't make any sense. If you're really my creditor, why are you borrowing from me? You should have taken the money as payment for the loan.
Obviously, the one has got a much bigger debt than the other, and therefore by claiming that this doesn't make sense, the bigger debt document becomes invalid.
Okay. Alright, so we'll talk about it. The Gemara doesn't use size, but it does use duration as a way to get around this, which is similar to what you're suggesting, is whether there's an inconsistency between the documents, and therefore it was impossible for the creditor to get his payment back to solve what he needs. Alright, each one's entitled to their shtar chov. They're both valid documents, and they can collect from those documents. See, Mashtan Shotziu, shtar chov zel zeh, it's our Mishnah. Rav Nachman Amar, zeh goveh v'zeh goveh. Each one of them collects on their star pole, similar to what comes in our Mishnah. Rav Sheshes Amar Kuchei Batarth Alamali. Why do you want to change the load? I mean, the expression is, why do you want to change the load from the left shoulder to the right shoulder? If the weight's the same amount, you haven't done anything to benefit yourself by moving it from one side to the other. So to over here, if the documents are, quote-unquote, offsetting debt documents, then just leave everybody with their property or leave everybody with their money, and we'll just cancel the loans or cancel the debt on both sides. So obviously the Gemara is going to ask, I mean, Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes are on Moraim, and they're explaining the... Seems to be they must be explaining the side of the Chachamim, which is that you collect both documents are valid documents. If that's the case, then from our Mishnah, it sounds like the Chachamim say Zegover v'Zegover, that they both collect. So what's Rav Sheshes going to do with it? That's Gemara will ask in a little bit. Right. So Rav Sheshes Amar Pukim Atzeret Lamalei Ella Zeh Omid B'Shalo V'Zeh Omid B'Shalo. Each one keeps what they have, and we just offset the documents. The Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Idis, Benonis, Zibar, Zibar, Zboris, if both parties, the creditor and the debtor, have equal property, either Idis, the best property, Benonis, the middle property, Zibar, the worst property, meaning that each of them have an equivalent type of quality property, then it makes no sense to exchange the property because it's like we're giving each other the same piece of land in a, you know, at the same quality of land. There's no benefit in exchange of land. Keep ligi. One of the parties has middle line property and one of the parties has low end property. Each one of them goes, when we assess the property, we assess the property with what you have, meaning that it's subjective. So there are two ways to look, some focus in the Gemara, in other places in Baba Kama, that when you're assessing the level of property that you're going to give somebody, is it an objective assessment? Do we look at what the market calls good quality property, middle right property, and low end property? Or do we look at the individual himself? He owns different types of property, there is a range of properties that he owns, and therefore we'll divide his property up into good, middle, and worse. So why does that make a difference? In our case, it can make a big difference. Because if we assess it based on the subjective parts of his property, if one of them has Benonit and the other one is Ziborit, what's he going to do? Say the creditor comes along and he grabs the Ziborit property, this low-end property. Now, the creditor has two forms of property. Objectively, he has middle-line property and low-end property. But subjectively, that middle-line property is really his Ittis. That's his best property. And a Balfo can't collect from his best property. So he's going to end up in a better position by having to give him back the Ziborit, the worst end property. So he'll end up being able to collect from the other party, the Benonit, this middle line property, and only have to pay him back the low end property. So there is value to exchanging in this case. Right? Generally said, well, what's the difference if they exchange? In this case, he's going to end up with better quality property by doing the exchange. Right? Whereas if you said it was objective, that the standard of what type of property are based on the marketplace, then when he gives him middle line property, you give him back middle line property. It's just not going to matter. Whatever you give him is going to go back and forth because you're basically on the same scale. Both of you are the same scale. So that's what the verse says here. With Nachman,
if there was only, if one only had middle property and one had very good property, then what would happen? There would, and there was an exchange, so that it would, that'd be beneficial to one, right?
Yeah, same here, the Benonis and the Ziboris. When there's different levels of property, you're going to end up with the benefit. But it does depend, and I think Mara will say in a second, who collects first. Right? Now, the Gemara is making an assumption here that whoever is in the better position is going to collect first. Right? Because right? Depending on who collects first, it's going to matter how you get, who gets up better, the upper hand here. So that's what Gemara says here in a second. We're going to see Rav Nachman, Zegover, each one takes it. It's a subjective standard. Ati bal ziborit, the person who holds the low-end property, v'gavi le benonis, then he takes the middle-line property from the other party. Davi gavei idit, but for him, that becomes high-end property now. This middle-line property that he got from the other party becomes high-end property because he has another piece of property that's below it. And the other party will take back, the Zibor will only be able to take back low-end property. So here there is a value to doing an exchange, Because, say for instance, the creditor comes to the debtor, it collects from the debtor middle line property, which he's entitled to do, because that's the only property he has. I mean, and he's entitled to pay notice anyway. Bob Kolb is entitled to middle line property. So he takes the middle line property. Now, the debtor, who has also a document against the creditor, comes back to take property. He looks at the creditor. The creditor has two types of property. He has low end and middle line property. But so that's only in the marketplace. But if you look at it subjectively for this, the creditor is holding high-end property and low-end property. Balcoa can only take the low-end. He can't take the best-end property. So he's going to end up taking this low-end property back. So therefore, the creditor is advantaged by exchanging, because he'll end up with middle-line property, and the debtor will end up with low-end property. What's the point of switching loads? We take an objective standard of what the property is worth. So, if he gives middle line property, the other guy will get middle line property back, because we're just going to assess what's the middle line property. It doesn't matter if it's his highest, the best property he has, but objectively in the marketplace, it's middle line property. They're just going to end up switching back and forth the same piece of property. So where it says, well, the Rav Nachman, this is what we pointed out just before, my cousin, the Ati Balzi Poripareshe. Why is it so clear to you that the low-end property owner is going first? Let the guy who has the middle-line property go first, the Ligvezi Boritz, and he'll take the low-end property, and then he can give it back to him, the low-end property. Right? It'll matter who collects first will matter as to whether there's an advantage in exchanging or not.
Unless they're exchanging exactly the same time.
Right. Well, they can't exchange at the exact same time because I guess they could, but then there would be an advantage. If they exchange at the same time, they only have one piece of property each, and then there will be a property. But the Gemara sees this thing, it's a sequential, but you don't exchange at the exact same time, it's a sequential. One collects, the other one collects, and you're going to have a transaction that has advantages by being perpetrated by, right, or being done by one party over the other. So Mara says, Lo tzricha, the kadim tave, he went first. That's exactly what you're saying. He had to first, he came and collected first. So ki ato l'migbe b'hadai dadi. But in the end, the Gemara is answering like what you're suggesting, is that even if one comes first, they're coming together to collect. Meaning that they both have a claim here, and they're going to come to collect together. Hello, Tzricha. Now, the Gemara has to amend the case to come up with a case where it makes a difference to exchange. This is the Chad Idi to Benonit. One has upper line property and middle property. This is the Chad Tziborit. One has low end property. Marsa, Rabbi Shalohain Shaman. Right, so then one says that you go by their subjective properties, and one says I go by the objective properties. Why does it make a difference? So now, what's going to happen when they exchange over here? If they exchange, no matter who goes first over here, right?
No matter. Holding different sides of these individuals in this scenario are holding different sides of the machloka in the Gemara.
Yes, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes are holding different parts of the Gemara.
Sorry. I thought you said about the individual.
No, not the individual litigants here, but Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes are going to explain the Gemara differently, because then it'll be whether there's value in exchanging the property or not. So one party holds the best type of property and middle line property, the other one holds only low end property. In that case, the guy with the low end property is going to be advantaged. Because when he gives low-end property to the other party, or the other party gives him middle-line property, right? In the end, he's going to be able to give back the low-end property. And so therefore, he ends up in a better... What's the two scenarios? So now it's not going to matter who collects first. Right? If the person with the high-end property and the middle-line property collects first, what's he going to collect from the other party? He's going to collect the Ziborit. He's going to collect the low-end property. Now, when he has to pay back the other guy, what is he going to pay with? He's going to pay with middle-line property, because that's what a Bob Kolb is entitled to. And that'll be his middle type of property also, because he'll now have all three types of property. He'll give him the middle property. So the guy with the low-end property is now advantaged in the exchange. Now, what happens if it goes the other way? Say the low-end property owner ends up collecting first. He'll collect from the other party middle-line property. But for him, subjectively, that middle-line property now becomes his best property, his idit. Because they're saying the Shalohen Shaman. And when he sees low end shaman, then when he gives back to the other party, he's going to give back the low end property to Ziborit. So both, no matter who collects first, the party with the Ziborit, with the low end property, ends up advantaged. He'll end up with middle line property, and the other gentleman will get his low end property. So that's how he says, that'll be the opinion of Rav Nachman. That's why Rav Nachman says it's always valuable to exchange, because there's a time when it's, or there are times where it's going to advantage the one of the two parties. Whereas Rav Shesha says there's no advantage. Why? Because we only look at the objective property. And the objective property is middle line property. And if you're going to give middle line property, then it's going to go back as middle line property. And therefore, there's no advantage in making an exchange. So now the Gemara asks the question that we pointed out when we first exploit their opinions, that the Chachamim won't mean, it's not, in our Mishnah it says, the Chachamim zeh goveh, v'zeh goveh. Each one collects. So how's Rav Shishas going to explain the Chachamim here when he says, don't exchange, just leave everybody where it is, because there's no value in exchanging. So Targum Rav Nachman, the Libet Rav Shishas, Rav Nachman, who was arguing on Rav Shishas, helped to explain Rav Shishas' position in this. Going to love a zeh le'ekzer, v'zeh le'chamish. Alright, so this is down a little bit about your suggestion, but what happens if the loans are for different durations? Meaning that they're not exactly the same. One was for 10 years, and one was for 5 years. Hey, he dummy, what's the case? Ilema Rishon Eser. The first lender lent out, the creditor lent out for 10 years, Vishani, and then the creditor went and borrowed back from the debtor for 5 years, Vachamesh, Vahalem Admon, Iloaiti Chayab Lachaketer Atalovimani, Halomatizimne. Then what's Admon's position? Doesn't make sense anymore, because the time to collect the loan hasn't come up yet. It's a 10-year loan. He's in the middle of the 10 years, and he needs money. The creditor lent him out money. He has no right to collect back from the debtor, and he needs money now. So he ends up going borrowing from the debtor for 5 years for a shorter duration. In that case, what's Admon's claim? Of course I had to borrow back from you. You didn't owe me the money yet. The money, the loan wasn't up until the end of 10 years. Ela Rishon Lechamesh. Oh, rather, the creditor holds a 5-year document. Vishani Lasser. Hechidami, what's the case? Itamat Zimne. Right, if it was the creditor now holds a 5-year document, and then he goes and borrows from the debtor for 10 years, right, what's the case? Itamat Zimne, if it's already the end of the 5 years, my time is the Rabbana. Then the Rabbana don't make sense, because what? The loan's up, he has a right to collect it, so instead of borrowing money, why doesn't he just collect his loan, and then he'll have his money? So then they make no sense. If the 5 years aren't up yet, then he doesn't have a right to collect from the debtor, and that's why he borrowed from the debtor, because he doesn't have a right to push him to pay him back. Well, my time is Admon, and then Admon's position makes no sense. So when it says, Lo Tzrika the Atabahu Yomo the Mishalim Chamesh, happened on the last day, on the day that the payment was due. Meaning that you're basically, he's sitting here, he has one more day until he can collect from the debtor. The creditor lent him for, I don't know if it really matters now, but lent him for 5 years. And then he comes back and he needs money today. The debt is due to be paid tomorrow. So does it make sense that he now borrows from the debtor for 10 years? Does that make sense? So Gemara says, that's my focus. Marsavar Ovid Inish the Yosef Liome. Right? That people do borrow for a day. I mean, sometimes you're under pressure for liquidity. Right? This happens all the time in business. That sometimes, even though the money's due tomorrow, you have to do something today. You're pressured to have liquidity. You're pressured to have money today. The only way to get money today is to borrow the money today, even though you're going to get the money back tomorrow. So here, he's in a position where he has to borrow the money, even though he's going to get back the money tomorrow, or he's going to get enough money that he wouldn't need to borrow if it comes tomorrow. Well, my server, love it inish, the yazik for yome, people don't borrow for a day. That just doesn't make sense. They don't borrow for a day. Then that would be the position of, right, Admon will say, people don't borrow for a day. The fact that you borrowed here shows that there really wasn't any loan out before this. Because if there was another loan, if you were really a creditor here, you wouldn't be borrowing money from the debtor.
You would have waited the day.
Right, you would have waited the day.
And then there's no time period that you would agree that people do it, and yet
I don't know if one day is an example, or that the Gemara is exacting in the one day, that the one day is...
It
sounds like they're exacting, to be honest.
They really... It's going to take 30 days, and that's something that would fit into...
I mean, why you only take... Why, see, that's the question here. The Gemara doesn't need this 5-year and 10-year thing anymore.
Right.
It just needs the first loan to have duration, and the second loan to come up and be long, you know, just
2 days
or 3 days longer.
Right. Very short money.
So the Gemara never erases that, but when I went to the Gemara, I said, I don't know if 5 or 10 make a difference. The only thing I could say is possibly that might be part of Adam's Kaina. It's exactly, why did you take out a 10-year loan afterwards? Meaning that you needed it for a day, you know, take it out 10 years, but you can make the claims would be that the debtor would only lend me the money, you know, based on these terms, or I could only get the borrowing at these terms of 10 years. Although, truthfully, in the if it's a loan from a Jew, there's no rivets. So what's the shorter the duration of the loan, the better. Right. So I think, the Gemara doesn't explicitly say this, but I assume that you could drop this 5-year, 10-year description at this point.
In this case,
because I don't think it's relevant to
that. She's for people to do a bridge loan because it's first.
Yes, we
have. If you have that, then that could be an answer.
In our business today, it's very common that bridge loans, right?
But even for a day.
Yes. Overnight.
Yes, you don't
there's, there's overnight. Yeah, overnight.
Right.
Overnight lending is very common today. And the question is, in their day, what's the common? And how, you know.
So in the matter, in order to explain this more, you said 30, is it still wrong? No, the explanation was going to the focus.
Yeah.
So maybe it doesn't, a short term doesn't exist, so it's not really one day per se. And that leaves you back with
I don't know. One day, I don't know how exactly the Gemara is, because I have to understand Admon's position is that people don't borrow for a day. Right? That wasn't just common in their day.
She pursued the idea that he's borrowing it for 10 years.
Right. Well, that's one, but also from to answer your question, if he borrows for 7 days, maybe Admon will agree that already that's a normal type of loan, or 30 days is a normal loan.
And then if you did that without explaining,
then it would that wouldn't explain the 5 and 10, but it would make that Admon would not disagree in that case. I mean, Admon could say that's not right. People are normally loaning. That's a normal duration of a loan. If that's a normal duration of a loan, then we can no longer say to you, why did you borrow from the debtor? Right, exactly. So I think that they might be exact here, because it seems to be that's what Admon's whole position is, that it's ridiculous to borrow for a debt.
So this is an incident.
Even psychologically.
I wasn't saying that. Yeah.
Psychologically, I think it makes sense. So there is, one day is one day. You know, there's a difference. Once you're already, you know, now it's 2 days, now it's 3 days, it's already a whole different...
Right. I mean, it has to do with their time period in the environment at that time. But yes, I would think that it is one day is the right thing. All right, now... Rabbi Bar Chama tries to explain the Mishnah differently in order to solve the problem and say we're talking about Yisomim. That there's an advantage here. Why? Because Yatme, Yisomim, are advantaged in what you can't collect from Yisomim. You can't collect from, unless they have property, you can't collect from them. So the Yisomim are in one party here, and there's a debtor-creditor relationship where the Yisomim are here. So the Yisomim can go collect from the one party, from the other party, the creditor, debtor, whatever it is, but the other party can't collect back from them because they're not allowed to take out of their metalkalin. So there is an advantage in doing the exchange. So Mara says, well, why is that a good answer? For to explain our Mishnah, right? Why are you explaining our Mishnah this way? The Chachamim's position in our Mishnah is Zegove and Zegove. Each one collects. Right? So if you're gonna say that the case in the Mishnah is we're talking about Yisomim, and that's how Rav Sheshit is gonna explain why it doesn't, you know, why we're trying to explain why the Chachamim say it's worth exchanging in our Mishnah versus in other times where it's not worth exchanging. Right? Rav Sheshit's position in general is what? That it's not worth doing. Just offset the properties. It's not worth exchanging the properties. So he came up with a case. Why did the Chachamim in our Mishnah say Zegova, Zegova? Because we came up with a case where it makes sense to do the exchange because there's an advantage by doing the exchange. Why is that? When one of the litigants is the Yisomim. When one of the litigants is the Yisomim, they're advantaged by doing an exchange because they won't pay in exchange.
You say they won't pay. We don't collect from them, but they right. Still have a mitzvah to pay.
Right, okay, possibly. If they're going
to pay. Then it's obvious.
The Gemara is about to say. The Gemara says, "Katani zegova v'zegoka." First of all, right? It says each one collects. So this is not a case where each one collects. This is where one guy collects, the other guy doesn't collect. So of course, like you're suggesting, it's not an even case. So Gemara says, "Oh, you can amend it to read zegova v'zeroy v'kavos." This one they collect, and this one's should be able to collect, but he can't collect.
Vain
love. Right? He doesn't have it. Right? Right, the Gobos, he could collect it. Right? Either way. Amar Rava, Shei Chubas Vidova. Rava says, I don't like this explanation. Rava Chama, one, Chada, the Zegova, Zegova, Tani. First of all, the language just doesn't match. I can't agree with that. But, right, this is something we saw earlier in the Masechta, right? Just about, 15 days ago. So, the Gavino, Arali Yatme, Vahada Leginu Minayu. Can Rav Nachman, what you can do, if you give land, if you pay the Yisomim with land, what can you do? Right, there we have the rule of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman, I'm a rabbi, Barbu, Yisomim should govern Karka B'chobas Abiyim. If they go out as creditors and collect property for their father's loans, B'chob Choser B'chobas Abiyim, they can go back and take that land back. When we say you can't collect from Yisomim, that's with Mitaltalim, or, right, land that's not part of the estate, that was not part of the estate. But here, this is land that they're collecting as executors of the estate because they're coming in their father's name to collect debts. They can go back in and take that property out. So in this case, there isn't such it's not uneven. It's not true. If you pay with land, you're able to go back and take that land back as your land. So Kasho. So Mar says, look on the Isla the Yatni Zibos, the Isla the Deidis. Now, make it a case where the Yisomim have only low-end property, and he has some nice high-end property. But in this case, there's a big advantage. There's still an advantage to switching. Why? Well, they noticed the Asley, it is to be Benonis, and he has high-end and middle-end property. The Asley told me, Gabi Benonis. The Yisomim come and collect from the other guy middle-line property. That's what a Bachob gets. Bachob gets middle-line property. But you can only take back low-end property. Why? The Inami Bishalal Kolatam Shomim. Wait, Rav Sheshi says you assess objectively in the marketplace. If that's the case, you should be able to take back middle-line property. Like you gave middle-line, you can take it back. Ha, any prime Nechsei Yisomim, El Mizi Boris. There's a rule that from Yisomim, you're only allowed to take from low-end property. If that's the case, it's going to be an uneven exchange. And that's why it's a unique case in our Mishnah where the Rav Sheshi is going to agree that you collect because you're going to have an uneven exchange. You're going to have to pay with middle-line property, but you're only going to be able to take back with low-end property, because that's a special rule by Yisomim that you can only take low-end property.
And then the fourth is broken by Yisomim because
Rav Sheshi's holds that it's objective standards. Rav Sheshi's holds bishel kol adam shamim that you assess based on the marketplace, and therefore your relative properties make no difference. If it's objective in the marketplace that it's a middle line property, you guys are going to exchange middle line property. So why collect from each other?
One guy has his boris, or is that because I'll get his benefits and I'll get it?
Hey, you get it back, exactly.
If he took it first, it would be a flip.
Right. He's saying that if we can look at it in that way, they're going to collect at the same time. Some of them have an advantage because they're not marked by the market about paying Balchov with the notice. So he says he comes up with that one case. Umar says, now I immediately hit the tapas. We only say that you can collect from Yisomim Ziboris when you don't have their property yet. But you have the Yisomim's property in hand. You have Benonis. You're going to pay them Benonis, and then what? Only take back Ziboris. No. You just hold on to the Benonis. You're in a better position then, because why? I'll pay them Benonis, I'll take my Benonis back. And you can do that. With Tapas, when you're already holding the property, we don't say the rule of only collecting from low-end property applies. If I'm holding on to property, I can keep the property I'm holding if they owe me money. So I don't have to do this exchange. In that case, it's...
Tapas is used loosely over here.
What?
Tapas is used loosely over here.
Right, yeah.
No,
he already has it. He has it in hand.
I think it's in Tapas.
Right, but we use the term Tapas in that way, meaning that same, for instance...
Possession is like natural law, this one.
Right, but this is, in a way, I agree with you, but not in this, like, the ultimate Tapas.
Right, but we have this by Shomrim.
Gemara
uses the term Tapas by Shomrim. But if you're a Shomer for the father's property, and you're also a creditor to the father. Hey, Dad, you can hold the mashkon, right? Can you hold the mashkon? The Gemara calls that tapas. That's the case of tapas. Right? The mashkon becomes a tfisa, according to that.
Right, you don't have to give it back to the Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah, exactly. So the Gemara calls it tofis. All right, so that's the case here. So therefore, the Sisomim answer doesn't work for Rav Sheshis, right? And then the only way we can explain the Mishnah...
Not Rami Barhama.
It's not like Rav Sheshis, but like only... The only way we can explain it is like the way Rav Nachman did for Rav Sheshis.
Rami Barhama is...
Rami Barhama's explanation will not work to help Rav Sheshis.
That was rejected, but right.
The explanation of Rav Nachman for Rav Sheshis will work in a mission, which is it's the one-day argument.
Right.
Okay. right, and
Hamlet's also arguing.
Who?
The question was Hamlet.
One day arguing?
Yeah, the Gemara is explaining, Rav Nachman and Sheshit are explaining the position of the Chachamim about Zegova and Zegova. So Rav Nachman is easy to understand. He says, yeah, go ahead, exchange. And he can show you where there's advantages to exchanging. I mean, he says it's subjective assessment. But Rav Sheshit says, no, it's objective assessment. Objective assessment, there's no advantage in exchanging. So the Gemara has to deal with, then what's our Mishnah talking about? Because the Mishnah says Zegova is Zegova. Why is there an advantage? Right? What's the
purpose of doing it?
What's the whole mission about? So he says
that one of them can, Rosh Hashanah says you don't do exchange, you can't hold like Adnan? Isn't that what Adnan says?
No, because Rosh Hashanah is explaining, I assume we're trying to explain Rosh Hashanah according to. Right. And Adnan doesn't say that. Adnan says that everybody, you lose, and the creditor loses here. Not that there's one.
The earlier creditor
loses because the debt, he can say basically your first document must be invalid because why would you borrow money from me if I owed you money? So that's it. So Rosh Hashanah is explaining. So then we have to explain then.
But in the one day, in the one day case, Adnan says no. For one day, a person's not gonna.
Right, and therefore he says, yeah, that's why the government said, go over. Okay. Okay, good. Shlosha, I told the Nisuyim. There are three lands in Nisuyim. It's a Mishnah that rings true. It shows up in other places. We have Shlosha Artzot the Bior by Shemitah. We have Shlosha Artzot the for Gidin. We have it in other places that. This idea that there's a division in Eretz Yisrael between three areas, three regions. One is Nisuin Yehuda, Be'er Yarden, and Galil. This is the breakdown in all these types, other Mishnayos also. You have the Eretz Yehuda, you have the Galil, the north, and then you have Be'er Yarden. Ain Mokim from ear to ear, so that you cannot move a woman from city to city. Umi Krak the Krak, or from metropolis, let's call it a metropolis. I'm just going to use it. Krak. Is a, you can look at the last line in Rashi, a craft is Godel Meir, it's bigger than a city. Boom, Malcolm Shvakim, right? It's a place that has big marketplaces, and Kol Sviva, Bayim Hesham Leschora, it's a center of commerce. Kol Damar Matsuibo, and everything is found in it. So let's just, I'm going to call it crack a metropolis, okay, just Starbucks. Loosely.
As a Starbucks.
Starbucks. Crack, and then an ear, I will call city, okay, so that's it. There'll be metropolis and city, so here. Same with team, ear to ear, you can't move from city to city, and we crack to crack, or from metropolis to metropolis. But Ota Arex, but within one land, meaning within one region, then Motimi Irli Irmi Krakaka. Then you can move around. That you can, the husband can say, look, we're moving from this city to this city, or we're moving from this metropolis to this metropolis. So the Gemara's assumption that metropolises within a given region are similar enough that it's not a big change, and cities within a given region are similar enough that you can make a change like that without the woman rejecting that change. Aval, Lomi Irli Krak, Lomi Krak Lir. Can't force a woman who lives in a city to move to metropolis, or from metropolis to a city.
Even in the same region.
Motzin minavel haraav and nayafa. You can move from a lower end property or lower living standard to a nicer living place.
Would that be even in the city to craft?
All right, so that's what we have to ask. About lomi nave yafel and nave araav. You can't go from a better property to a lower end property. So your question is obviously, all right, I mean, it sounds like what is the chiddush that you can move, upgrade and not down it. All right, Rav Shimon Gamliel, me'af lomi nave araav and nave yafel. This is an interesting line in Rav Shimon Gamliel, where that you're not allowed to move even from a even to upgrade, you're not allowed to move. Because when you move to higher end properties, then it tests the metal of the person. All right, we'll have to see what that means in the Gemara. All right, Bishlamon Krakli here. So okay, it makes sense in the mission that he can't move her from a metropolis to a city. That she's used to her standard of living and her conveniences. So you can't move it from the big metropolis down to the city, because then she'll no longer have what she has in the city. About Meir, because Meir, lo shvichi, komile, that doesn't have all these conveniences. Elam Meir, the crack, why can't you move from a city to a metropolis? Right, it's equivalent of an upgrade. Right. So my time, I'm excited with Rabbi Yossi Bar Bechanina. This is like what Rabbi Yossi Bar Bechanina says. Amar Yossi Bar Bechanina, minayin shishivet bachin kashet. How do you know that these living in a metropolis right, in these large cities is bad for you. Shenamar is a very, this Gemara is extremely interesting. The Chemia gave a bracha to all those people who volunteered to live in Yerushalayim. Why do you have to give a specific bracha for the people living in Yerushalayim? Because living in Yerushalayim is living like in a crack in a major city, and living in a major city was detrimental to their health. So he had to give them a special bracha to be willing, because it's detrimental to their health, to live in the city. So what does it mean that it's detrimental to your health? Look at this Rashi. I don't know. It struck me. Maybe we won't, but, you know, bring a cord with you, but it was amazing to me. If you look at Rashi, Shiva Krakim Kasha. It's the first Rashi in the Gemara. Shiva Krakim Kasha. She call mityashvim sham. Right? Everybody lives there. It's tight living quarters. Vidokhakim. Right? You know, it's condensed. It's dense. The population is dense. But makrivim abatim zuluzu. And all the houses are stacked close together. Vesham avir. There's no air. There's no good air quality there. And listen to this. Aval be'ir. In the city, Ishkano, Tuparisim, you have, you know, fields and orchards, smukum the batim next to the houses, Baviran Yafet.
And it's
quality of the air quality is better.
The original argument for suburban living.
Exactly. It's amazing. I don't know, it's amazing Rashi that the air quality is significantly better.
That's the exact argument that people, you know, tiny people have against suburban living.
Right. Quality is better, but Rashi sees the focus on this aviran yafet and in some avir. It's about this. The air quality is much better in the outside the cities. It's very interesting.
No, I think this is part of it. Yiganos and Pardesim, Smuchim, Levatim, Aviran. In other words, it's open. You know, the air is part of it, but it's just part of it. Now, everything in the house in the city, the house, you know, in the metropolis, the houses are very close together. You know, you have no living space. You know, that's exactly.
There would be a lot of smoke.
Right. Fire and smoke and chance of being burnt down. All right. But yeah, it's just great. But it's true. It's true, and it's amazing that they
focus. Where did Rashi live?
In France. I don't know if he lived. I don't think he lived in a big city. He definitely, originally, when he was born, he lived in a smaller town. Not a big city.
Originally, he
was
in Frankfurt, Alain. Right.
I don't know where
he went. And then he moved to the Worms.
I don't know his history so well, but it's interesting. It's very interesting. All right. Next, the Shulchan Aruch, it's Bodek. That if you move to the, even from a lower end property to a higher end property, it's Bodek. My Bodek, what does it mean? What do you mean that when you move from low end to the high end, it's Bodek? The small, the Amr Shmuel, Shuni Beset, Kulak, Kolim, Heim. And when you see a change here, the original term is used, you know, Shini Veset. Veset is a term used by Nida. And so Shini Veset is Tilas Koli, that the change in cycle is a sign that there's a sickness here. So Shmuel applies it to, and the Gemara uses it in other places, as a general principle, that when one changes their routine, that causes sickness to come. As she says, even if it's for the better. I think we talked about this once here, that even when someone doesn't sleep for a number of nights, you go without a lot of sleep, you go with less sleep than you want. Then the next, last night, then after a week of sleeping only, you know, 4 hours a night or 5 hours a night, then all of a sudden you go and you take one night and you sleep 8 hours, and you feel worse afterwards. Right? The idea that Shinui Veset, right, that changing one's pattern has an impact upon it, even when it's good benefit, even when it's more beneficial, when you're sleeping more. So something over here.
Your body develops rhythm, and anything that disrupts that, maybe even the long term will be better, but...
There's a thing here that moving from a low end, from a lower end to a higher end living, that's a change. And by changing, the body can't necessarily handle those types of change. I thought of the Sefer Ben Sira. It reminds me of that. There's a famous story. Rav Shalom Zalman, when he grew up, he was very poor, and he never ate meat. So when it came to the Sheva Brachos, they had meat on the nightstand for his Sheva Brachos. And he ate meat, and he was very sick afterwards, because his body was not used to eating meat. Right, the same thing here, it was an upgrade, it was something they gave it fancy, because it was a Sheva Brachos, it was something like that. And yet, because he wasn't used to eating the meat, or having that type of fancy meal, right, it affected him to... it's a cousin of Ben Sira, so that's it. Ben Sira says, Kol Yimei Ani Ra'im. All the days of the Ani, all the days of the poor person are bad. Ba'ika Shabbatot B'yamim Tovim. What about Shabbos and Yom Tov? The Ani, Shabbos and Yom Tov, at least they're nice days, it's a good time. Ah, could be Shmuel. That's like Shmuel, Damer Shmuel, Shmuel Vesed, Tchilef Kolimeim. That even Shabbos and Yom Tov for the Ani are not pleasant because they're changing their normal schedule by taking their normal way to eat, their normal way they are living. So that the Shabbos and Yom Tov are also upsetting because they are changing their routine. But Tiomer Aple Lot, right? Even nights, the Shuffle Gagim Gago, Umarom Harim Kamo. So that even the nights of bed, why? Because he lives, this is interesting, he lives in the lowest house. He lives in the lowest house in the neighborhood. When the lowest house in the neighborhood, all the water comes down to his roof. Meaning that all the roofs pour their water down to his roof because he's in the lowest location. But, and where's his orchard? It's at the top of the mountain. So when it rains and the wind comes, all his earth and all his stuff gets washed downhill. So his dirt provides all the dirt for the other properties down below, and he's always collecting the water from the other roofs. So again, that even his nights, everything for the Ani's life is miserable in its entirety because he always ends up in the worst location, and when he ends up in the worst location, it makes everybody else is dumping on him, or anybody else is getting an advantage from where he's positioned. And therefore, when he goes to sleep at night, he's going to wake up in the morning and he's going to have all the water on his roof, or he's going to have all his kerem, have everything be washed down the hill. So he has no peace.
So he still lives in Novi Yotel to Rav. I mean, theoretically, that the way Shlomo explained how Kratim here sounds exactly like it's Novi Yotel since it's a duplicate.
Right. Okay, we're going to get it next Gemara, after the next mission of the Gemara's going to discuss.
Yeah, but you would say...
Like, we just go, because we're not going to finish, so I'm going to get this done. All right, Chris, we'll go. Kol Malon Eretz Yisrael, everybody can go up to Eretz Yisrael. Then a Kol Motzin, but you can't take out of Eretz Yisrael. So this is the famous Gemara, we're going to get to a guy at Eretz Yisrael. You can force to go to Eretz Yisrael, you can't force to leave Eretz Yisrael. We'll see what that means. A Kol Malon Yerushalayim and a Kol Motzin. You can't force to move to Yerushalayim, you can't force to leave Yerushalayim. Again, this is in context to the Mishnah before, where you can move within cities, you can move within Krachim, within the same region. Right. This is even interregional, right? You can come from Kutbaris to Eretz Yisrael, and from Eretz, even within Eretz Yisrael, you can go to Yerushalayim, and those trump the other considerations. Echad Anoshim, Echad Anoshim. It doesn't matter whether it's the man or the woman, either one can force the situation. Nosha Yisha Eretz Yisrael, Begarsha Eretz Yisrael. A person marries a woman in Eretz Yisrael and then divorces in Eretz Yisrael. Notin Lami Moos Eretz Yisrael. You have to pay your money, the monetary or the common coin or currency within Eretz Yisrael. Nosha Yisha Eretz Yisrael, Begarsha Bekaputskia. If you married in Eretz Yisrael and you divorced her in a foreign country in Kaputskia, Notin Lami Moos Eretz Yisrael. You give her money from Eretz Yisrael because that's where the Sheba was created. Right? The Ksuba was given in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you have to pay money for Eretz Yisrael. Nothing, you should be Kaputskia, but Garsha for Eretz Yisrael. If they married in Kaputskia and moved to Eretz Yisrael, no Tilam, and Moses Eretz Yisrael. That doesn't work anymore. The Sheba should be from Kaputskia. Why is he paying her with the money of Eretz Yisrael? So Rashim Leo says, Omer, no Tilam, and Moses Kaputskia. Keep this same standard. The standard should be the same. Wherever you had the Ksuba written, that's where the currency should be. If you married her, put you in divorce and put you in, nothing like most could put you give her the money. All right,
why do you need to say
right, exactly. All right. I call him Alan. Everybody can go up there to Israel, even servants can go up there to Israel, and they can force their masters to move. If their masters aren't willing to move, they have to write them a document. Right, they have to write them a Shar Shechur. What happened? There are some people who are explicitly, right in the Mishnah, called Malin includes Avodim.
Rashi explains that differently. Let's see, Avodim.
Oh, it's both ways. It's called Malin with both ways. If he has an Avodim, he can force everybody to come with him. And if everybody wants to go there or runs there,
he
has to let him go, or he has to give him a star. Okay. Yes, you're right. But it's both, like our Mishnah says, it goes both directions. All right. Alright, here you go. Yes, this is your answer. Includes from a good property to a bad property. You can even move to Eric, force someone to move to Eric Strel, even when it's a downgrade in their property. So then then not everybody can go out is what the Sumai, the Sui Evit Shabarakum Kutzarts by Aris. Right, this comes to include a Evit who ran from outside of Eric Strel to Eretz Yisrael. The main lane, Zabnei Hocha, Bezil, Mishum Shibat Eretz Yisrael. We told the owner he had to sell him in Eretz Yisrael in order that he can stay here. So this is, I'm sorry, so that's when I read it wrong, right? These are the two inclusions of the Gemara. I mean, Akomo Tzina and Akomo Malin, right? Those are the two sides. And you can force to go up to Eretz Yisrael, and you can't force to leave Eretz Yisrael. So force to go up Eretz Yisrael is that the Eved has to follow him up to Eretz Yisrael. If we already have Eved explicitly mentioned, that means that you can even force to go to Eretz Yisrael where there's a downgrade in property. Now, if a komotzin means that you can't, you know, ain't a komotzin, not allowed to take him out of Eretz Yisrael, that includes an Eved that ran from Chutz L'Aretz to Eretz Yisrael, you can't take him out anymore. So what do? We say to him, sell him in Eretz Yisrael, you've got to sell him to another owner in Eretz Yisrael. Mipnei Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because the Yishuv Shiva Eretz Yisrael is important enough. We say you can't take him out, you've got to sell him in Eretz Yisrael. So kol ma'alim Yisrael l'suim ay. What does that come to include? I see my man over yofel and over rof. Right, that comes to include moving from downgrade. You can even force a downgrade in these situations.
From a good property in Galil to
even within Eretz Yisrael, or even with Eretz Yehuda,
or yeah,
even within Eretz Yisrael, where you're
saying more extreme,
right? That's, and you can't go out the stream. Even to upgrade your property to go out. Right, you can't do it. But I did a tiny ratio ain't motzin. Tiny seifa nami ain't motzin. Ain't motzin is not a chiddush anymore. It's like I'm gonna teach you what that the same chiddush that we learned in the ratio. We say the same thing in the seifa. We have a parallel structure in the Mishnah, but not that there's an additional chiddush here. So that would explain. Now, so Navi, what's the chiddush that you can't go from Navi Ra to Navi Yafa? Right? You were saying, what's the chiddush that you can't go from a nice property to a downgraded property? That's exactly our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is juxtaposed to the other Mishnah. It's come to say that our Mishnah applies to even in the instance when you're moving from, when you're making a downgrade. So the fact that the Mishnah before says you can't downgrade, says over here, this Mishnah says you can downgrade. And that's, the contrast is what...
When it's Eretz Yisrael or
Yerushalayim. Right. When you're making a spiritual upgrade can then lead to a physical downgrade. Okay. Turn about on who Omer, so now let's explain how it works. Who Omer la'alot, the Omer tzlo la'alot. He wants to make aliyah, she does not. Kovin la'alot la'alot, she's got to go. We force her to go. In la'af, they take la'tzuba. If she doesn't want to go, she's out without her tzuba. He Omer la'alot, who Omer tzlo la'alot. He wants to go up, she doesn't want to go. Kovin la'alot la'alot. We force him to make aliyah, in la'af. If not, yotzi, we tell him he has to give her a get. He thinks tzuba, and she's entitled to her tzuba. Right, which means that she's in the right over here. He Omer, let's say she wants to leave Eretz Yisrael and he does not. Open Oto Shlo, let's say, can't force him to leave. We force him not to leave. Bim Lav, they say below Ksuba, then she wants to leave anyway. She goes out without her Ksuba. She loses her Ksuba. Omer, he wants to leave. She does not want to leave. Open Oto Shlo, let's say, we force him not to leave. Bim Lav, you'll say, we take Ksuba. And if he leaves anyway, he's got to give her a get and a full Ksuba.
No,
we try to obviously want to keep the marriage intact, so we try to force him to stay, meaning that we try to push him to stay here so that the marriage stays intact. But if not, right, then because the ideal is that they stay in Eretz Yisrael, so that's we're trying, or that they go to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael.
We see that they're staying in Eretz Yisrael is more important than keeping the marriage intact.
In the end, right? In the long run, it's right. But either way, we try.
Right.
So in the first step, we try to push him to going to Eretz Yisrael, otherwise we don't. Now you could say, which is not, so it depends on what your position is here, and that's not clear. Maybe we'll spend some more time on it tomorrow. But that if you, whether it's a mitzvah saseh to live in Eretz Yisrael, and whether you're kofin al anaseh, right, so maybe the kofin oto could be that, you know, here, to stay in Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah saseh. So generally we say that you're allowed to be kofin on mitzvah saseh. So if that's the truth, you know, that might be the possibility that this term of kofin is a borrowed term, that a borrowed term from other mitzvahs saseh, that we're kofin oto means that we try to push him to the mitzvahs saseh. Right, no seisha. Right, this is the monetary stuff that we talked about.
That's another way to say it, because we do present the alternative that if not, we don't actually force him to stay.
Right.
We try to get him to stay, but if push comes to shove, and he insists on leaving, we don't force him to stay.
We cope him to. We do force him.
No,
if he runs away anyway,
we force him to take Suga.
No, the first statement, that's what Yossi pointed out, there's two stages in the Gemara. Once it's cope him to, let's we first try to force him not to stay, and then the second stage, if he leaves anyway,
if he insists on leaving anyway, then we force him to
give the Suga. All right. And then the internal sphere in the Mishnah. if they married and their son left, then once the kibbutz gets, then he gets where the shibud was. They get monetary currency of his son. Ava bar the shibud as linen. We go after where the ksuba was entered into. Hey, what's safe? But nothing should be kibbutz gets married and kibbutz gets gashu by itself. The portion of itself. Nothing let me lose their son. Then you pay her in Eretz Yisrael. So then it should be based on kibbutz gets, right? Alma, but Targa Govina is when we go after where the collection is. So Amaraba, Mikube Ksuba Shanukan. We're talking about one of the coolest of the Ksuba. Kasara Ksuba Derabonon. A Ksuba is Derabonon. And since it's Derabonon, we go the cool line both instances. And the cool line both instances is to pay out of Maos Eretz Yisrael. Right now. Right, that's a cool as to the husband, because giving the ksuba and the obligations of the ksuba are on the husband. Right, so the kula to him is we go after the shibud where it's an advantage to Eretz Yisrael, and where it's a disadvantage, we go after guvina. I mean, they were always advantaging Eretz Yisrael or the currency of Eretz Yisrael.
It's easier to understand.
Right. I think it must be that the money in Kibbutzka is bigger. The coins in Kibbutzka were bigger, and therefore it was to his advantage to pay in the coinage of Eretz Yisrael. Assuming that that's what they're after here, but also I assume that this whole mission is about the giving Eretz Yisrael the upper hand. Right. That, so it's over here that we just spoke that we give Eretz Yisrael the upper hand in both instances.
It would be called Kula.
Right. It's not Kula in that case. Yeah. Right. Rabbi Shimon Omer no tein lamimus kibbutzia. That was Rabbi Shimon Omer says he keeps the structure that way. He says wherever the shibud is, that's it. The sarek ksuba d'oraisa. So he holds ksuba d'oraisa. It's like any other debt document, any other debt document where the shibud's entered into it, that becomes the locus for the currency. If it's written in a Bavel, then he has to pay Babylonian money. If it's written in it was written in Eretz Yisrael, that was the locus of the entering into the document, and you can pay him from the currency of Eretz Yisrael. If it has nothing written in it, if he takes the document in Bavel, he pays Babylonian coinage. He pays Eretz Yisrael coinage. So there's nothing marked in the document, wherever you take the document out, that becomes the new locus, and therefore you pay the money there. Katavo keses stam. What happens if it just says keses, silver in it? Mash yirta lova migvo, right? Whatever the lover wants to pay, you can pay with any type of currency, because keses means money, any money. So you can pay with any money. Mash enke miksuba. That's not true of miksuba. Ahai. What is enke miksuba? What is not true of miksuba? That is in the first case where it goes after the shibud. No matter where you are, you always go after the shibud. Then he always like subas doraisa, and it would look like a loan document, exactly like a loan document, and therefore you would be go after shibud. Whereas the chumash, you know, it's subas derabanan, and therefore it always goes after Eretz Yisrael, whether it's the shibud or the collection. No matter where you are, you go after Moses Eretz Yisrael. Cut the book as a stam. If it just says keset, then he can pay whatever coinage he wants. Pay Manasco. Can he pay the metal itself? Does kesef never necessarily mean coinage, or does kesef mean silver? And he can pay a block of silver. He can put in metal. This is never metal. It's written a coin in it. Matbea kesef. That means that he has to pay with currency, with coinage. Silver coinage just doesn't tell you he can pay with any currency he wants. What about, if you're already going to say that it's coinage, let him use prutos, right? Prutos are the smallest coinage that are used. The Republic, read through the Catholic of the Yenish. People don't make those prutos in Kesef, they're only made out of nekoshes, they're only made out of copper. Therefore, when he says, Matbea Kesef, that excludes prutos, because prutos are made out of nekoshes. All right, here we go. We'll start the Agadita. Some of the best Agadita better to throw. Shas, Tarabanan, La'olam, obviously premised on this our Mishnah here, that why can a person go up to force to go up to Eretz Yisrael, and why is that considered a kol mala? The La'olam, Yidur Adam, Eretz Yisrael, he'll be ir shiruba obde kochavim, a person should live in Eretz Yisrael, even if he's living in a city that is rove, non-Jewish. Ba'al Yidur b'chutzlar, he'll be ir shiruba Yisrael, and not in chutzlar, even the city there is rove, Jewish. Shkola dar.
Better live in Ramallah than New York.
Exactly.
I guess it's not dealing with something like this.
Right. Shkola dar b'Eretz Yisrael. Zomeh, Hishyish lo eloka. One who lives in Eretz Yisrael is as if he has a God. Shkola dar b'chutzlar, it's Zomeh, Hishyish lo eloka. One who lives in Chutzlar, it's as if he has no God. Shenemar, it's the post of Eretz Yisrael, it's Eretz Kanan, Yod lachem lelokim. Give me your Eretz Kanan so I can be your God. Mashma, that if what? You're not in Eretz Kanan. You don't have a God? Right? V'chol, shino dar, v'eretz tzibaret, in lo eloka, the Gemara couldn't accept that. That if you live in outside of the chutzlar, as if you have no God, meaning that it's not one of the mitzvahs of tzuliyat baris. Right? It's clear that Hashem rules over all the land. Hashem is everywhere in the world. So what does that mean? It's as if you have no God. So v'lo melecha, kol adar v'chutzlar, tzkilo oved, avodos kochamim. Whoever lives in eretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's as if he's worshipping. David that you are sending me away from walking around the inheritance of Hashem. Go worship foreign gods. Today, because he's being exiled out of Eretz Yisrael, that to him was the equivalent of going and worshiping foreign gods. Who said to him to go worship foreign gods? Whoever lives in outside of Eretz Yisrael is as if he worships Avodas Kochavim. And like I said, the next Gemara, Rav Zeira and Rav Yehuda, goes on for a long section here about an argument, basically a modern day argument, whether making Aliyah is valid or not valid. And they go back and forth in the sources here about whether making Aliyah is a good thing or a bad thing. Rav Yehuda and Rav Zeira. And Rav Zeira here. Yeah. Mark's about to do this in later on, but the sugya goes on, so I'm not going to start it now. But just a great gemara about the value of living in Eretz Yisrael and how much more value it has than living in Chutz La'aretz. Kilo obeid avodas kochavim. It's a very strong statement of the gemara at this point.